David Byer.
Here.
Eddie Cook.
Here.
Peter Graves.
Here.
Dan Mazzola. Gilbert Orantia. Yes, Orantia.
That's me.
Yes, thank you.
Here.
Michael Pollocky. Morgan Reed.
Here.
David Stevens. Gordon LaShawn.
Here.
J.R. Sloan.
Here.
Senator Don Shooter. Richard Stavnia.
Rebecca Huber.
Representative David Stevens. And you have a call.
All right. Thank you, Regina. First order, next order of business will be any notes or news or follow-up items from the last meeting. I didn't receive anything from anyone, so if anyone has any like to raise, this would be the time. Okay. If not, then we'll move on to our next item, which would be approval of meetings, 3 minutes of the last meeting. Motion to approve.
Second.
We have a second. Move that. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, motion so carried. You never know who you're going to see.
Yeah.
Okay, our next item of business is a presentation by the Department of Environmental Quality, and I'll turn it over to James.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is James Dean. I'm one of the ADOA Asset Strategic Program Managers who assisted ADEQ for this pitch, and I'll let the gentleman to my right introduce himself.
Yes, good morning. Hi, Gary Heller, CIO, ADEQ.
So in October 2013, ITAC approved with conditions the first phase of the MyDEQ project. The project was to create a web portal which automated business processes for public and private entities which fall under environmental regulatory requirements. Phase one is completed. With the launch of the portal and 13 business processes, phase two is currently underway, and that was approved by ITAC in May of 2013. That's on schedule to complete by the end of this fiscal year, 2016. So that's going to add an additional 22 business processes to the portal. So once phase two is complete, lessons learned identified and third-party reviews assessed for the first two phases, ADEQ will begin phase three, which is underway today. This phase will add an additional 7 processes to the MyDEQ portal in FY17. ASSET is recommending approval, the pitch be approved, which we can review after the pitch be approved. But at this time, I'll turn it over to DEQ to present the additional information regarding the phase three part of the project, as well as answer any questions that you have.
Again, I'm starting from the beginning of the second stage, where we are. So we've seen actually a lot of paper transactions within ADEQ. That's where we started this MyDEQ project. Again, back in 2013, we took an inventory of all our business processes, and we identified that we have a lot of scope for automation. And then we identified that leveraging e-technology is one of the core areas. And that's what we have identified in our strategic plan. So this is how our strategic plan looks like. And as part of the plan to leverage the e-technology, we took an inventory of all our business processes. Our processes impact our customers, our related entities, or they impact our program staff, or general public who look for information. And as we look at all these different processes, we have prioritized the impact to the customers or the regulated entities. And that's where we launched the phase one, two, and we continue to focus on those processes before we touch others. But as we look at the customer processes, some of them may impact, there are overlaps between program staff as well as the public as well. So a lot of the things that we are doing, they, in fact, actually provide automation opportunities for our program staff as well as the public itself. Just want to provide, actually, a status update on where we are with MyDEQ. like James said, we started in 2013, and then we started to release the functionality in bits and pieces. So the green, as you can see, is what has been released into production and what is available for our customers to use. Quick Pay with a credit card capability was available since 2014, July 1st. And then we completed the rest of the phase one functionality in Jan 30, 2015. And we took the entire phase two as three different releases. And we have completed two of those releases. And also the Quick Pay ACH option as well. We are scheduling to complete the phase two on June 24th with the final release, which is the release three. And if approved, we propose to start the phase three on July 1st of 2016. Again, these are the business processes that we have delivered to the customers with phase one, two. The greens are the ones that are completed with phase one and two. The oranges are the business processes, and the orange box are the one that we're currently working on. And we plan to deliver them with release three, which is June 24th of this year. Talking about the execution approach that we followed, we are using agile methodology to execute this project. That's how we took it. We divided the entire phase two scope into bits and pieces, and we're delivering within each iteration. Our sprints are 2 weeks, so we continue to deliver a functionality within those 2 weeks. Sometimes that may not be something that we can move into production and make it available for the customers, but at least we can actually get it to a stage where we can say this is independently verifiable before we move on. That minimizes the risk of failure. In terms of the team that is involved here, we have the ADEQ staff, primarily the product owners, the staff from the divisions who provide us the requirements, and our network engineers and the support team. These are the full-time staff from ADEQ. We have asset support for oversight and WSO2 platform that we use today for the middleware. And we use contractors from Knowledge Services and also from WSO2. And our independent verification, the third-party review, is done by Lifecycle Delivery. Again, given that this is a major initiative and we're delivering in phases, we have put a lot of emphasis on the project management. Our approach has been, we just articulated our approach, and the design, in terms of the design guidelines, what we learned was we wanted to make sure the process is given the emphasis than the technology. So every time actually we approach a business processes, we value stream map it, we take it to the Kaizen process, understand the process first, and then actually come up with a technology design. And then as part of the design, we have integrated the voice of customer, we have reached out to the customers right from the get-go at the beginning before we finalize the requirements till through the design phase, as well as actually throughout the UAT process where we test what we have built. In terms of the daily management of the project, we deployed the visual management. We use Kanban boards for the daily updates and huddle boards, basically all metrics for the weekly update of the leadership. We make sure that we continue with the improvements that we have identified using visual process performance and adherence. Moving on for the phase three, we have identified 30 plus business processes that we can automate in phase three. And what we're asking for is $5.8 million as part of it to fund this initiative. And we estimate the project completion date to be June 30th at this point. Again,
Jim.
Yeah.
How much has this system and your processes improved efficiency on the ability to get these licenses and permits and such? In other words, do you have any kind of quantitative number on that?
Yes, sir. For the phase two business processes that we have deployed, going back, those business processes that we have deployed with phase one and phase two.
But what I'm trying to get at is, if you were doing 100 permits a month in the old way, how many are you doing with the new and improved process?
The phase one and phase two has not addressed any permits. With the phase two, we have addressed mostly the customer compliance submissions data. Today, they've been submitting in paper, which typically takes around 3 to 4 months for us to be able to verify the submission. Today, after we automate it, it takes 24 hours.
Thank you.
And Sudhakar, could you also talk to what you've accomplished with QuickPay in terms of being able to rapidly enable customers to make payments?
Sure.
Just to what the process was previously.
Previously, we used to receive checks, essentially. And then the entire process from receiving the checks to cashing them and then reconciling the payments, we used to take anywhere from a month to 2 months. And there would definitely actually cost involved with the process. We have enabled the credit card capability in 2014. What we've identified is most of the payments that come through, at least within the air division, they would like to use the ACH option rather than the credit card, which we knew always. So we have delivered actually the credit card, which was available with the J billing at that point, and then delivered the ACH afterwards. With QuickPay, we have seen that 10% of our transactions today actually come in through that option, the credit card option. With the ACH, which we delivered on January 28th, we don't have the metrics yet.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
What I'm trying to get at is what's happened to our cash flow? I mean, is it up? Is it down? Is it sideways? I'm all about the money. Show me the money. if we've put money into this, you know, have we gotten some kind of a financial boost or reward for that? That's what I'm
I don't have that information in front of me today. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, as we implement these transactions, a lot of this is timeliness of submission, and we freed up resources. And Sudhakar, once we get back to the phase three transactions, I don't have phase two in front of us today, but we showed the reduction in touch time and elapsed time for these processes. In other words, you know, people out of regulated entities being out of compliance, return to compliance is increased. Permitting times have increased. We haven't done a cash flow analysis yet. We've received about $800,000 or $900,000 through QuickPay. Obviously, the payments have come in sooner. We haven't done any type of cash flow analysis on that.
Mr. Chairman, you know, I'm not antagonistic. I was the guy who helped Henry put this deal together.
Absolutely.
But I'd like to be able to show that to my fellow members to be able to substantiate continued investment. So
okay.
If you could do so, it doesn't have to be exact.
Okay.
Just give me some rough numbers and some good news if there is some.
We can do that.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah.
Moving towards the phase three, these are the transactions or the business processes at the very high level that we propose to automate. What we have done with each of these processes is we measured the elapsed time and the touch time with each of these transactions. And then we did a value stream mapping of these business processes and proposed automation as a future opportunity. And then we're estimating actually the touch time in future. What we understood is if we automate these transactions, we can free up the last column you see in the savings, or the number of folks, or the number of ADEQ staff members that we can free up to focus more on the compliance than on the data entry. So we have identified that these transactions, if automated, would free up around 9 individuals to focus more on the compliance. Again, as part of the prioritization, just want to focus on the approach that we have taken. Our core focus has been to integrate the voice of customer into everything that we do. When we looked at these transactions, we have, in fact, a lot of the transactions around, we took an inventory, it was around close to 500 transactions that need to be automated. And since we wanted to prioritize them, we looked at, actually, we developed a criteria set for it. And the major criteria that we have used is the customer impact. And the difficulty for us in terms of actually the processing today, how much difficulty we see in today's world. And then we also looked at the transaction volume and the lessons learned in the future, you know, phases of the Mighty EQ. Based on that, we've taken a prioritization. This is just a working board, you know, we wanted to show you. As you can see, it's four quadrants. The y-axis is the impact, the customer impact, the x-axis is the difficulty. Anything that is on the top left quadrant is something that we want to automate as soon as possible. So the phase three business processes fall under the top left quadrant. And the top right-hand quadrant, again, the customer impact is very high. It's just that we see that there is a certain amount of difficulty in approaching them right now because those processes need to be value stream mapped. And that's where we identified the top left-hand quadrant is what we can pick up for phase three. In terms of the risks, we see that the risks have been reduced in the past few phases. When we initially started in 2013 and 14, WSO2 was very new to us, the middleware platform. Over the past couple of years, with Asset's help, you know, we have developed the capabilities in-house. And since we involved the customer early on, we are very sure that the requirements actually are what we want to actually automate rather than finding out later on that, you know, there's a discrepancy. Since we follow the Agile methodology, we release a working software every 2 weeks, and that's mitigating actually a risk a lot. Unless we make sure the sprint is successful, we don't move forward, we don't actually spend our funds. And we take a bi-weekly planning cycle and status checks with the leadership team as well. And we continue to work with the asset team for WSO to support an overall platform. And we're continuously applying the lessons that we have learned actually from phase one and two and in each every sprint. And our third-party review is done by this lifecycle delivery. And they come in actually for each quarter. So for phase two, we are in the fourth cycle of the third-party reviews. That ends the presentation. If you have any questions, please.
So with that, we'll open it up for any questions that the committee members may have for Sudhakar or Gary.
Mr. Chairman, I noticed that you checked the box that the platform is software is open source. Every time I think of open source, I think of the vulnerability of security. Can you elaborate that very, you know, important information is not at risk?
In terms of the data, we don't have any secure data. We don't have any PII. So that, to a certain extent, actually mitigates the risk. But again, it is an open source application, but it's behind our firewalls. And with Asset's help, we've taken measures that we don't have any security breaches.
And do you have a third party party that actually validates and verifies that there's no holes? And
we have done a third-party review in April of 2015.
Sorry. May I? Yes, we just completed. It was a network infrastructure assessment. It wasn't an application penetration test. That'll be our next test. We leveraged the DOA contract with ASNET with Canes to do that assessment of our network. As Sudhakar mentioned, right now we're running this platform in our private network behind the firewall. We have web application firewalls. again, the data is protected, it's encrypted in transit, obviously. So we're taking measures, and then the next step is to work with ABUA to move the platform to the enterprise services platform in the Amazon cloud, which they're working on developing and building. So we feel, again, we have one more penetration test on the software side, which we haven't done yet. The check for, you know, any intrusions into the SQL or the back end of the workflow, any of the actual data. Because our main concern, as Sudhakar mentioned, we don't have any charge card information, personal identifiable information. There's no HIPAA, there's no HIPAA compliance issues, there's no PHI. Our main concern is defacing the site, denial of service, or getting in and disrupting actually customers' data that they've submitted to us. So that's been our focus.
Yes, Director.
Mr. Chair, what's the timeline for the phase two implementation? I know you said it starts in the beginning of the fiscal year of 17, but what's the timeline for completion?
For the phase two?
For phase three.
Phase three is June of 2017.
So you plan, it'll take the entire year?
Okay.
Is there any risk that it would take longer since that funding will lapse at the end of 17?
Let me answer that. So again, we're using an agile approach, and we're doing releases. So even though we showed right now that we plan on being done with phase three by the end of the year within the $5.8 million, we'll have a detailed release schedule like we did with phase two of the transactions that are being released along the way. We track the financial burn rates. A lot of that information we submit to Asset. So we actually track the transactions completed and against the actual schedule. I know we had an issue in phase two where we had an overrun, right? We came back to ITAC and asked for appropriation authority to spend some more of our money to complete that. There were some lessons learned there. Right now, we did not ask for an appropriation in FY17. This appropriation we're asking for is the FY16 appropriation of the $5 million. So again, we've slowed down. We're delivering customer value. We're trying to focus on what the customer wants, and I think we've proven it, even at the end of our projection right now, I don't know the exact amount, you can probably speak to it, but our projection right now with finishing phase two, we'll still have money remaining at the end of June, May or June. We still won't exhaust our phase two funds, which we plan on rolling over to phase three.
In terms of, to just add to it, in terms of the timeline, the way we looked at the scope for the phase three is to ensure that it can complete within that 1 year. And we have estimated the time it takes to deliver within each sprint. Based on the lessons that we have learned from the phase two, we're pretty confident that we can deliver 1 year for phase three.
Okay. I leave this committee, but is that something that you guys could share once you get to that end of phase two, moving into phase three, the more detailed timeline?
Absolutely. Yes.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, sir.
Question, the timelines through phase one, phase two, have we generally been meeting those timelines, coming close to that? We see what's been completed, but we're not really sure what was projected and what we were managing to.
I'll speak to that. So in phase one was our first phase. We experimented with a couple different options. Again, we were new to this, and the learning curve was flatter than we thought. So no, in phase one, we missed a lot of our timelines. The agency went from a traditional waterfall, you know, methodology to an agile methodology. So there was a lot of learning with the technology stack. There was a lot of learning with just the new, you know, project management systems, methodologies, and tools. And then we introduced the lean, the visual performance management, visual performance adherence. So there was a lot of moving parts going on then. WSO2 was new to DOA. We tried to work with DOA to collaborate. So in phase one, we really struggled with meeting timelines. In phase two, we started to meet some timelines, but we continued the struggle. In phase two, we tried to utilize a two-party contract where we used two different state contracting mechanisms and brought in four teams. And what we realized is the teams, there was just, the communication was too complex. The sprint teams were too big, there were too many people on the project, the burn rates were too high. So as we were looking at schedule versus burn rate on our financials, we had to make a change and slow something down. So what we did in phase two, somewhere early on in phase two, we changed our approach. We obviously got someone, Sudhakar, that worked at Amex for 10 years, that did web portal mobile app development projects, that's used to Agile, that had a network of staff. And what we used is we leveraged the knowledge services contract to bring in, you know, fewer staff that we could manage ourselves and not have to butt up against the heads of multiple companies competing to get more staff on the project and looking at their burn rates and their profitability. So we had some issues with that. So we changed directions. And in phase two now, we've been hitting most of our targets for phase two. I mean, obviously there's interim targets that you don't always hit, but those release dates, as we were talking about, that we'll have for phase three. So phase three, I'm not sure how many releases we'll have within phase four. We'll have four releases within phase three, and the approach we're using, we'll be able to see how we're doing on, you know, first release, second release, third release. You won't have to wait 9 or 10 or 12 months to find out, oh, you're not doing very well. We'll know at a glance how we're doing. So we've learned a lot of lessons, and we've made multiple changes. And the team now is we're starting to pick up a little more velocity, because you've got to balance that with velocity and agility and sustainability. So we're pretty comfortable with the team we have now. We're really confident of the success of phase two and then of phase three.
Mr. Chair, one more question. Sorry, as a follow-up. So developing the maturity of the Agile processes, looks like you've got a lot of contractors helping with this project. What about sustainability and maintenance of the system as we go?
Good question. So sustainability and maintenance, when we look at our future state organization, obviously to maintain this, we're hiring staff that are, you know, they're Scrum Master certified. One of the issues we had earlier on with this process was educating our business stakeholders within ADEQ on product ownership. So we sent the product owners to get a product owner certification through the Scrum Alliance. So we're working on training, we're hiring staff that have those future state skill sets, the KSAs. Obviously we're hiring Java developers, we're retooling some of our current staff. So we have a target for 17 and 18 of our future staffing plan, and we feel we'll be able to support this with existing staff within our indirect budget that we have today. Because we're looking at fewer, better people as attrition and retirement and getting the right skill sets on board so that we can have a less reliance in the future on contractors.
Mr. Shooter?
I think maybe this is a good time to say it. The approach, I think, going forward, instead of writing from the legislature, instead of writing a check for a $50 million project or something, although the ultimate amount may be $50 million, we are looking real hard at breaking that into a $5 million, you know, say $5 million. If you hit your $5 million targets, then you get the next $5 million and so on and so forth, kind of a lot different than it has been in the past. And so I would encourage agencies or whoever wants to do that to under-promise and over-deliver. I mean, you know, just keep that in the back of your mind, because we're going to be doing these things on an incremental basis, and if it's not working, we're going to stop the bleeding.
Makes sense.
So just be aware that that's, at least at this point in time, kind of going to be the general philosophy going forward. So you guys are fine because you've been doing it in increments, but I would, for what it's worth, that's what people need to know. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions from the committee members?
Hello, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
You guys talked about your Agile methodology, and it looks like your sprint cycles are 2 weeks.
Yes.
Okay, and you said four major releases throughout the next fiscal year?
Yes.
When's the last one scheduled for? In FY17.
For the phase three, we have not developed a detailed schedule.
Okay.
Based on what we have seen with the phase two, we have four releases in phase two. Again, it can be more than four.
Okay.
What we have seen is that unless we have a functionality that can be independently deployable and usable by the customer, it's not good to move forward. Hence, we have come up with four release cycles for phase two. It can be more than that, depending on the transactions and the functionality that we see. But we would like to release as much as possible, with as many small increments as possible.
As soon as possible.
As soon as possible, yes, sir.
Mr. Chairman, I agree with the approach. I would just suggest that, to Rebecca's point about the funding running out by 17, you maybe don't wait for that last release until June, in case anything goes wrong.
Yes.
I agree with this. Thanks. And we will actually we'll make sure that we release actually the sending the files release schedule.
Thank you.
Okay. Last call for questions. Okay, I'll turn it back over to James to.
So as noted in the action item, we do recommend approval of this project. We did not place any conditions on this for a couple of different reasons. One is ADEQ works extremely closely with ADOA. It is also an APF-funded project. What that means is they have to come to ADOA in order for funds to be released to them to continue on with the project. So there's a lot of oversight and collaboration with the agency. And over the history they have shown as the project has gone forward, they have met and their deadlines, especially with phase two as things go forward.
Okay, with that, I will entertain a motion for action.
Motion to approve.
Okay, we have a motion to approve. We have a second. Second by Morgan Reed. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Aye.
Okay, motion carries unanimously. Thank you, Sudhakar and Gary.
Thank you.
Yeah. Our next item on the agenda will be Department of Transportation. James,
okay.
Leads off.
So, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I am still the same person I was for the last one, so we will continue going with that, but I'll let the two gentlemen to my right introduce themselves from the Arizona Department of Transportation.
My name is David Kniggy, and I'm Project Director for the Motor Vehicle Modernization Project.
My name is Eric Jorgensen, and I am the Assistant Director for the Motor Vehicle Division, ADOT.
So on January 22nd, 2014, the ITAC reviewed the Motor Vehicle Division's Legacy Systems Replacement Project, or PIDGE, in which ADOT proposed to modernize the aging MVD legacy systems as the second phase of the overall strategic e-government initiative. On May 27, 2015, ADOT provided an annual update on the progress of the project. ADOT's here today to provide another annual update on the project and how it has been proceeding, including the included in the meeting packet as well. Is the second fiscal quarter third-party review, which is required per condition to be distributed to ITAC on a quarterly basis. As this is an informational item only, there is no formal approval required at the end of this, so I'll turn it over to ADOT so they can give you an update on the project.
Thanks, sir. Good morning. Just to put some context around this project, since it's been a while since you've heard from us. One of the things, obviously, the Department of Transportation and Motor Vehicle Department has very, very aging systems, antiquated systems. Many of them is as old as 40 years old. So one of the goals of this modernization project is to, of course, replace those. At the same time, address a problem we have in terms of even finding resources in the marketplace that have skill sets for the technologies that our old systems are in. You know, there's only so many times you can go out to Sun City and find folks like myself and others that are aging to maintain those old technologies. The biggest part of this project, though, is to, of course, if you're spending this much money, is to produce something that is going to produce not just simply replacement of the capabilities that we have in the current systems, but to provide for future modernization and flexibility. Essentially, you know, doing things that even building for things that we're not even maybe perhaps authorized to do today, knowing where transportation in particular has a lot of change happening in the marketplace, you know, both from just across the board from automated vehicles to you know, different ways that that we manage information from people that we gather. We also happen to be, you know, of course, a warehouse of information that's probably one of the best in the state in terms of the comprehensiveness of the information that's gathered on citizens. You know, motor vehicle departments throughout the country typically have, you know, more touch points, you know, with citizens broadly than almost any other agency. And for that purpose, we have to seek improved information management, you know, of course, those old systems. You know, we don't even have, you know, our core system isn't even a relational database. So, you know, fundamental business intelligence, simple, fairly simple activities, you know, take a lot more effort and are more difficult. And last but not least, certainly is one of our key goals is to, of course, improve customer service, but most importantly, to improve self-service and the ability of citizens and both individuals and organizations to serve themselves in a manner and time that they choose. Those were the original kind of impetus for the project when we were approved. But I will have to kind of jump back in time a little bit and also talk about something we did prior to this. So this project is unique in that we first went through a project where we updated and came out with a new release of our portal, which is Service Arizona. We used that that release, and then we went through a mechanism of clawback, trying to by taking money with the partner, whoever it is delivering that portal service. We were clawing back statutory available funds. And that is our funding mechanism for this project. So just to remind you, we have, and then we use that same contract in order to actually engage in various ways. So just to give you an example, we also use knowledge services, but whereas most departments, their own accounts payable would pay the fees for those services, we have third party, our partner that happens to be working, in this case, Hosting Service Arizona, actually pays on our behalf. So the agency doesn't expend those funds. It's paid on behalf of the agency by the party in Part A. That's not what we're discussing today. Of course, what we're discussing today is the project that's on what we call our modernization project.
Mr. Chairman, can I ask a question?
Sure.
You mentioned the number of touch points you have. Do you now have either an email address or particularly a cell phone, or at least a phone number for a substantial number of people with driver's license or plates?
We do have some emails, maybe less than 40% probably. Very few phone numbers and cell phones. One of the concepts, I mean, just for example, the way we currently transact in the marketplace is we treat every instance of encounter like it's new. We don't have anything that would fit into the very common model in the marketplace of having an account, right? A customer account and account information, so that when I return, the system knows that I'm returning. It knows what I've done in the past, all those kind of things. Instead, you know, we treat it like we have for forever, which is every time you show up, you know, we treat you like you're doing a transaction. You could have been here four times before. You could be coming here now. So we don't carry that account information in the old system.
But to get your license plates online, you get an email to renew. Now,
correct.
You're saying that's still a fairly small percentage of the population?
I think it's under 40%. Our hope is that we'll actually get on both those accounts, those numbers up, because self-service is actually based upon ease of reuse and familiarity and actually speed of transactions. Those are predicated on basic, building blocks of customer relationship management concepts, which include contact information. We're required under many statutes to still mail everything, you know, in physical mail form. Those are things that we're trying to address because, you know, notaries and mailing and all those kind of things are very difficult in terms of, you know,
the reason I'm asking, you know, when you went to the 10-year driver's license or whatever it is, it's a long time now, the addresses are pretty inaccurate for both, we use it for jury service and for when officers write citations, they're swiping the card, which gives them the address on the card, which is I don't want to say worthless, but it's not very accurate. We're finding if we had a way to actually get phone numbers or email, we could reduce the number of people that fail to show up in court and pay their fine by about 30%. But we got to figure a way to get it. And it's either you guys, and maybe you don't have it, or trying to get law enforcement together at the point of contact. But that's one of the downsides of the lengthy driver's license issue, is the addresses are really bad.
And if I could speak to that, if we've achieved our goal, because I mean, we want self-service, we actually want to be rather proactive, and even, you know, notifications, anticipation, rather than simply, you know, reactive. To do that, we're going to really be pressing hard. I mean, even to give you an example, and this is something that we're not allowed to do under statute today, but we would love to have the ability to differentiate between different customers and reward customers who are willing to give you more information, you know, in some manner or form. We're not allowed to do that today, but those are the ways that any organization can actually change behaviors, collect information that otherwise wouldn't be given to them. So in our redesign and our rebuilding of these systems, we have to build for those possibilities in the future, because that serves us just as much as it serves you. But we would agree 100% that efficient communication is today email and through cell phone texting and those kind of things. And then allow the customer to decide how we contact them, you know, give them the option of how are you being notified and contacted. But today we follow the statute that we have, but we have to build a system for what the statute may be in the future too. So.
David, I have a question from Senator Shooter.
Senator Shooter.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have almost the opposite problem. There are people always snooping around and going through our garbage and doing all kinds of crazy stuff. But I have two or three places around the state that I have homes and such, and somehow somebody found out that I have a couple of ATVs up in Flag area, and I've got, you know, this car in Yuma and this car in Phoenix and, you know, all that kind of stuff. How can that happen? I mean, I don't go on the site or anything, but I mean, how can they find that out?
Actually, there. I can't speak to the specific instance, but you know, if you look at any, they can look at activity in merchant fees. They can look at activities at counties. A lot of information the counties post. Sales activities are posted.
Well, apparently they got it off your website. I mean, that's as near as we can tell. That's the only thing that was kind of the common denominator, because it was all about vehicles. So, is there? I mean, do we have like individual user security somehow, or anything like that, or?
And actually, that information, I would be surprised, because it's actually not stored on
the
website.
Is that what you're saying?
That I don't know.
Well, you're looking at, potentially, is there a way that someone, if they have your license plate or, you know, look up the registration.
Yeah.
See who will get the
register. I'm not trying to be, you know, irritating or something, but I mean, I'm just trying to figure out how that happened.
Well, and back to the point that we made originally, we don't have account systems now, so there's not a way for them to, for example, hack your account and go in and see it. We do keep the motor vehicle records. The motor vehicle records are secured by only being allowed to be issued to for legitimate purposes.
So it has to be a RAT and ADOT, is what you're saying. I'm just trying to narrow it down. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks, guys. No, I'm not trying to pin you down.
Mr. Myers, did that answer your question? That, you know, at least where we're heading, you know, and what we're trying to do? No immediate solution for you in the existing system. So, yeah.
This isn't that, if my memory is right, it's like 2020.
And actually, we have good news on that. So hopefully, and we'll get to that in just a moment. A couple of key project changes that since we saw you last year that I think would be nice to highlight. First of all, previously we had a kind of a co-leadership of both our IT organization and the customer, which Mr. Jorgensen. And we simplified the project, and we all report completely and totally through Eric. And Eric, being the motor vehicle director, is both the owner of the project, directs the project, makes decisions about the projects. So highly simplified the process. Also, we did change the name because, you know, fundamentally the goal of just replacing our legacy systems was not sufficient. If we don't modernize it for this amount of money, then we certainly failed. You know, if all we did was replace the systems, that would not be a good use of funds. So we picked a name that motor vehicle modernization that represents the goal rather than what we were kind of labeled on early. Another big change that we just mentioned is we're going to a phased implementation from a big bang. Last year we suggested that 2020 we would implement everything all at once. There's we do have the just principal justifications for that were it's simpler, and the other part is we have very fragile systems. When you do phased implementation, you of course have the challenge during that time of concurrent and parallel operation. A very vulnerable legacy system makes that more challenging. So originally we talked about Big Bang, but not surprisingly, when you move the ownership of the project completely to the customer, the waiting a long time to get anything approach was not acceptable, and Eric kind of pushed for a whole different concept of as soon as possible, deliver as much as possible, which takes us to the last point, which is we're going to have phased implementations of major components, but we're going to start releasing as early as June of this year components of the application that are available and usable as soon as possible. So we'll be getting a process of deployment starting as early as June of this year. And we'll talk a little bit about, more about that in a minute. Okay, one other thing, one reason we wanted to meet today is we just recently finished the Gartner independent assessment that that ITAS asked us to undertake. Gartner came in, reviewed both materials, did interviews, did significant amount there. They have a methodology they do for all these kind of independent assessments. And so they completed that assessment. We included that in the materials that we distributed. So we wanted to share that with you for two reasons. One of them is we worked with Asset in terms of bringing Gartner in. We actually use an Asset contract. This is something we're kind of a guinea pig in terms of the whole process of, you know, the ID&D function at the varying degrees of assessment granularity. And so we wanted to have some kind of an evaluation of the process, what did it cost, how did it work, those kind of things. So it's relevant what they found, but it's also relevant what we found out about them and their processes so that we can extrapolate that to other projects throughout the state. So they recently completed it. Generally speaking, they presented to Eric substantially. And, you know, from the project's perspective, the result was very favorable. And they identified a significant number of strengths to the project. Of course, like any good assessment, they came up with some recommended actions. We included those recommendations in our planned responses within your materials. And lastly, we're planning to repeat this annually. The one thing I'll say about this, the benefit of them being there at this stage in the project is very valuable because otherwise the transparency is less. But as we start deploying things, I think the benefit of their assessments will be far less than the judgment of what's actually released. The best way to judge a project is by what it does, not by what somebody assesses they will do. So, you know, as the project matures and gets near the end, we might question whether the value of that independent assessment is as great as it is at this point in time. But we're planning to do it every year, annually, regardless. So. So overall, like I said, they were favorable, gave us favorable rating. One thing they did say is a project of this size and complexity should always be treated as though it is a high risk, basically a yellow project, you know, because just by size and complexity, there is almost no way to not be in that state. So your normal management practices, the things that you emphasize should be in place, treated like it's not a low risk project. Very strong, favorable feedback overall. They one of the most positive things they identified is the recent changes, like the switch, the ones that you saw, the switch from Big Bang to phased early release. They assessed the project, their approach, the staffing, their qualifications, and were favorable there. They suggested that the early releases themselves will be the most telling indicator. And lastly, they gave us some areas for focus. Just to highlight the strengths really briefly, they found our executives particularly engaged and knowledgeable. So they do a lot of independent interviews trying to assess what everybody knows. And we're quite impressed with our sponsorship, which is in terms of how aware they were of the project and the details and specifics, which of course requires their involvement. We're following an agile methodology as well. We're also using some Microsoft technology called TFS, Team Foundation Server, which enables us to in very granular way track estimates and performance against those. All of our hours are reported through this very detailed, granular time reporting mechanism. We have good team cohesion, engagement of the business themselves. Of course, controls were fine. We have all of our principal party, essentially vast majority of them were co-located, which is good. Well thought out prediction, of course. A couple things that they identified is we had brought in a business owners, but they thought that the number of business owners needed to be greater. So that's one thing. The one thing I will say that they pointed out that I think is very important to emphasize is, so our first early release that we're going to do will be our first deployment substantially of many millions of records. So we're actually going through our first data conversion, if you would, first physical production deployment. June of this year. So well more than a year before we do any major components. So rather than waiting and having the first time you do data conversion being real close to when you go live, we'll have done 50 data conversions by the time we go live with our first major piece, shutting off functionality. To do that, however, of course, we've had to go with 40-year-old systems. You wouldn't be surprised at how bad that information is within that 40-year-old database. So we're continuously working very hard on data cleansing because one thing new systems are not tolerant of is crummy data. So, yes, sir.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
A question, and you mentioned modernization as opposed to replacement project here, which implies we're changing our business processes as well. Can you talk a little bit about BPR and what we've done to improve the business processes so we're not automating broken processes?
Do you want to talk to your brother?
Sure. So we have been working on a lot outside of this project itself and changing the way that we are doing business, both from smaller technology projects, but also from just the way we approach business technology, our business processes today. We've had employed with us lean consultants for, it's a couple of years now that we've been going through those processes. And with the governor's initiative, we're doing that even more deeply now, making those business process improvements. And then making sure that MVM, this project is part of that, so that you're right, they are building the system to the new processes, not the old processes. That is another piece that Gartner had mentioned in places that we need to make sure that we are focusing. Is that we are bringing in some OCM, organizational change management, help around the BPR, and we're continuing to identify those resources, bringing it in, making sure that we're building to the way we will be doing business, and like David said, focusing much more on how do we get this out of the office, self-service, online, where you want it, when you want it.
We'll go back to my earlier
conversations. I remember your system now. The data from driver's license and plates are separate. Whether you can't, they're not an account. You can't pull that together. But under this plan, as I remember when we did the pitch, isn't there going to be an account? So maybe it makes Senator Shooter nervous, but won't that be combined? Is that my memory right?
Yeah. In the future, we hope whoever did steal that would be. They get a lot more information about it, but you know, no, just.
Well, I mean, I don't care if they know where my names are, but
so we
just
have,
irritating.
We have gone through a significant process, even historically, of combining customer records, which is kind of the fundamental part of that. The systems are loosely tied today. But having said that, we have hundreds of thousands we have orphaned records and records that could be duplicates, but we have to analyze whether they are in fact duplicates. So one of the things we have to do as part of this system is, you know, you end up with one customer, one record, then you end up with multiple accounts. So you could have an account shared with your wife where you're working, you know, where you say, she could transact on my behalf, and you know, those kind of things. So we have to be able to support not just, actually you end up with more than one account per single customer, but we really want to know one and only one customer, and that's the piece.
So as you move to this, what would it take to gather a cell phone number or an email or both? Is that a statutory change? Is this something you could do, like when you come in, you fill out your driver, you just gather it? What would it take to actually gather that data?
So, you don't mind. One of the things that, I know, just, it's not exactly germane to this conversation, but to get to your question, we're, like I said, we're doing a lot of other things outside of just the MVM project, knowing that it'll take, for full implementation, it'll still take us until 2020. So we can't wait that long. We do need that kind of information. We are working with our current partner, IBM, to continue to make enhancements to our online portal. And as we make early releases, we will continue to make enhancements in that method that will begin to pull that information. There isn't a way for us to demand that information at this point, but we can make it attractive to them to provide that. Certain services are better done electronically, and right now 60% of our registration renewals, for example, are done online, so we think that we would get more email addresses along with that. We can make it more attractive to provide your email addresses and provide some benefit around that cell phone number for texting. We're looking at appointment scheduling, for example. That would be a great way for us to start collecting email and cell phone numbers so that we can send those appointment reminders out to them. I think we will begin to see a lot more of that kind of collection of data.
So you either have the carrot or the stick, right? So either there's some incentive to give it or require it to do so. One last interesting output, the last one is of this project, which is unusual for an IT project. We're actually generating a significant amount of basically potential legislation. So, I mean, even in something as simple as, you know, the desire to, at some point in time, to extend credit. You know, so like if you have high volume organizations in the that you're doing business with, even to extend credit throughout the form of a day, so that at the end of the day you collect your fees at that time. You know, I mean, those are the kind of things that just make for very, very efficient operation. You know, so the project is actually generating a big list of, you know, things that would be legislatively beneficial. Building the system to those, if they ever, you know, if those things ever do come to pass. And if they don't, then it's okay because, you know, there's still aspects of the system that you build for what you have. So we have things that are being built for what is, what we expect to be, and then things that are even designed, you know, for the future to plug in. And so all of those things are kind of why it's modernizing rather than replacement, you know, looking well into the future. So, the ownership by the business is so critical to that because, honestly, you know, IT folks, you know, the only thing we have is we have the perspective we have now, which is the systems we have now. You know, by having the business owning and heavily involved in the project, it's funny you get the, you know, kind of that looking forward. To kind of move forward, they gave us a whole bunch of a few recommendations. Some of them, like, for example, they, as Eric pointed out, they really wanted us to do more OCM than we're doing now, which is organizational change management, which is actually dealing with not just throwing a system out there, but having it being planned in its deployment. It's harder for us because the project itself, that would be easy for us to do OCM, but we have to do it at a more broad level, as Eric pointed out, because actually the change is happening beforehand, and then some of it's waiting, and then some of it's beyond the scope of the project. So the OCM actually, it rises into a higher level within the agency. They identified some additional resources that were suggested that we've actually added. There's a couple of risks that they really highlighted that they wanted us to take extra caution with. One of them is we're doing foundational work concurrent with some of our technical foundational work concurrent with the building of the functionality. But even more important is we don't have a contract with an external source, so there is a risk that we can keep expanding our scope because we don't have the contract to constrain it. So what would normally be if we were to go out and engage a vendor for fixed price to do something, that contract would limit. We wouldn't get anything more than that, certainly, but we certainly, you never get anything unless you pay more through change orders. So in our case, because it is internally managed and internally controlled, you do have to have greater discipline around scope management. Because there are contractual mechanisms that are limiting that. So our new project timeline, previously we were planning to go live with everything at 2020. We now have two major releases planned, one in basically calendar at the end of calendar year 2018, which would basically be our vehicle side of the house, title registration and other functions that support that. The next major release is in 2020 as before, which addresses drivers and licensing. Prior to that, though, if I'll highlight the little red box, that's the things that we're doing, early release of everything that we can as soon as we can. So a good example is, and some of it has nothing to do with kind of the scope of the project in the first place. The project is using modern contemporary content management capabilities. We have problems with our current content management in terms of deploying to the field offices. So we may move that content management, it has nothing to do with our project, we may move our current policies and procedures and how they're distributed to those field offices way to the front. So those are the kinds of things that will, other things to be deployed through portals and other technology, you know, as much as we can, as early as we can is the goal. So that's the, and it's a substantial change even philosophically on the project, you know, it's rather than carefully waiting till the end. Now, for large chunks of the system where we're turning off the old system and turning on the new, those are those two major releases. So.
But even our first early release that we're looking at is our Customer 360, which is a way for us to look at the customer holistically. Now, it'll be a very limited piece, that very first release, but that gets us right to that place where we can begin to build those accounts, and we'll be, by the time we have that first release, those accounts will be sales. And that's something that we've been pushing for too, as going through the, right now it's in the House, Senate Bill 1357 is an electronic titling bill. Should that pass, and it's received unanimous support through the Senate, and makes it through the House, that is something that is envisioned already in the system, as the capability to do that, and that may be one of our early release projects as well, that to get that out earlier, which would necessitate the early release of something around a account management.
In customer, piece, yeah.
Customer account. So.
So hopefully that's good news to you, that rather than delivering everything at the end, we're trying to deliver as much earlier. I mean, budgetarily, just to talk about it, this is through January this year. We've spent about 20% of our original budget. We have, if you look from a time perspective, it's been, we've been understaffed to this time. At this moment, we're fully at our expected staffing levels. So, but that only happened in January of this year. So it was a slower ramp up than we would have liked. On the other hand, we were very selective on our staffing selections and trying to pick people with modernization experience, those kind of things. So rather than just adding people to add people, we've been, you know, fairly careful at the, you know, adding them at the right time. We are at this moment, though, burning it essentially at what we expected to, you know, from the original budget that we put together. So one issue we do have is that when we did put the original budget together, we did not budget for, because it was a subsequent requirement for the assessment, for the Gartner's assessment. So if they were to do it, you know, four or five times, you know, it could get up to, you know, $400,000, so you know, or more. So,
Chairman,
yes.
So it's $100K an assessment.
Roughly, yeah. 80 was how much we paid this.
Mr. Chair, to some of the earlier questions about establishing and/or linking accounts, bringing a lot more data to the forefront here, and to Senator Schitter's specific question, I think secret is going to become even more important with the modernization project. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, actually, you know, for us, it's funny, because and all, you know, being blunt, PII and those kind of information. We have other information that's even more sensitive than that we maintain related to law enforcement. And so what we have, security is, I mean, we have on the project, which is unusual in these kind of projects, our own security expert working with the agency's information protection department, because actually security for this particular information is, it has this, you know, similar to the HIPAA and healthcare, but this is, which is very sensitive, so we're building into the technology, actually, a bunch of security principles, and then the organizations working together are doing a lot, because we are planning to deploy to the cloud. That's our current plan. And so there's certain constraints that effects of that. I will tell you this, though, the for example, our earliest releases are all behind our firewall. In other words, we're only releasing it internally to our own people initially. So we want to actually operate and use it for a substantial period, you know, do the kind of security assessments and security analysis that we need to do prior to making it the public-facing components. Currently, Service Arizona, which is the public-facing component, isn't directly, it has a unique connection. It's kind of just a storefront for the data, which is actually, so the processes served are actually served out of our back-end mainframe systems. So the data is actually not in Service Arizona, in the portal itself. So, and we'll follow a similar paradigm for the delivery of the portal part of it, the consumer-based part of it. And then, of course, there's all sorts of security considerations today, because it does tend to be, you know, a very, very hot topic, obviously. So
let's follow up on Mr. Chair. To that point, I know you've got Gartner doing annual reviews. It may also be helpful down the line to have some periodic intrusion type analysis as well, third party, to kind of make sure that as we are deploying some of these important client customer facing services, that's being assessed.
Agreed. And one other thing that we're also doing, because one other substantial change is in the world is in terms of authentication itself. Consumer authentication will move beyond simply username password. You know, there will be substantial, we're working with certain, you know, with the whole industry, watching very carefully the progress that different firms are making in terms of, you know, different ways of authenticating remotely, because, and then, of course, multi-part authentication as well. Combining those two, you know, physical authentication of the person along with informational authentication, those two things combined give you the maximum level of authentication. Actually, one of the things that's interesting within our system, traditionally we just simply do a pass-fail, you're in the house or you're not. We're actually going to maintain an authentication score, both on per event and then also for the person themselves. How confident are we of who you represent yourself to be? So, for example, if someone has lived in the state for a long period of time, we validate information with Social Security Administration, other external sources. The more we gather those activities, the more activities they have as a citizen, it's like a credit score. You know, your authentication score goes up. That's our confidence score in who you are. That's different than an authentication score for an individual in the transaction where you show up and you're taking a selfie. That selfie is being evaluated, facial recognition. You're providing other information like that. Those are all coming too, and you know, those are the things we're preparing for. And those are all part of that security infrastructure. That's in addition to worrying about the at-rest information that's there that you're talking about, which is a different consideration. So.
Senator Shooter?
Also, put a little money in there for rat trapping, will you?
So we feed you now all the court citation disposition data. Is that going to need to change as part of this project?
So
will those fees have to be changed?
So, no, they don't have to be, but we'd love for them to be. So, but we recognize that you know we have well over 150 different interfaces, national, local, and then the courts, of course, are a significant one for us. One disadvantage of what we currently have is the number of inaccuracies, you know, and correction within that whole cycle. If we go to an SOA, you know, based interface with, you know, to the degree possible with immediate authentication, of course, and validation, then that's better. But we can't time that perfectly with changes you may have. So our approach generally on interfaces is to support the old format and timing and mechanism. But our interface architecture is such that we can support a very modern interactive message-based approach. So to that, a long answer to your question, but the answer is really, if you want to update kind of our connectivity between us, we absolutely are open to that, but we won't require it. Otherwise, timing is impossible to implement because you have 150 partners, getting them all ready for, yeah. So. Lastly, we just have a list of active things we're doing to manage risk. Things that you would expect given what we talked about, and I won't spend a lot of time on this. The only one that's kind of interesting is there's the security expertise that's actually on the project that we've identified. So, and with that, I'll open up any other questions. So.
Any other questions from the committee on the informational item? All right. Thank you for your presentation. For last item, next meeting is planned for Wednesday, March 23rd. Keep your eyes open for confirming information on date, time, and location. And if there aren't any final issues or items that any committee members want to raise, we will call this meeting to a close.
Thank you.
All right, thanks. Thank you.